The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, a Tampa tradition, a Tampa legend since 1960, a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. Don't worry, drive Curry. General Manager Sean Sullivan, he's got the Ira Kaufman discount for you. Just ask him for it. It's at the website, BillCurryFord.com. You can find Sean there or just right into the dealership, which is nicknamed the Giant. It is the biggest around, largest service department in Florida. Bill Curry Ford, family service, family makes a difference. Shop for a new vehicle or check out all their tremendous lease offers, BillCurryFord.com. And be smart and go to FloridasElitereStoration.com today. FloridasElitereStoration.com. So you educate yourself on who to call 24/7 when you have a disaster at your property. Fire, flood, mold, storm damage, which is a killer, water damage. They have decades of experience on the insurance side of the industry as adjusters, so they know all the games and all the tricks that are played by insurance companies to make sure you don't get the money that's coming to you to restore your property, which is your greatest investment. Florida's Elite Restoration owner, Josh Martin, he's got an Ira Kaufman discount for you or Joe Bucks fan. Mention either one of those when you first call and after your free evaluation, free inspection at your property with the top technology. If you move forward with their services, they'll give you $500 back. And that's maybe cash for your deductible or just cash in your pocket. Florida's Elite Restoration.com, serving the entire Bay Area and across the state. All right, Sage. Now, look, you've been patrolling One Buck Palace on this fine Tuesday. We beat the rain, which is fantastic. And bottom line, you were sweating your butt off, talking to Bowles. You were needling Baker Mayfield. What do you want to tell the fans about your day out here at One Buck today?
Well, I hadn't been out here in a while. It was good to see Lee sitting there with Jenna Lane, basking in the shade. And then Lee had to get up and go stand out there in those sultry conditions. Enthusiasm level, Lee, from what I saw, still very high. Ask Mayfield about it specifically. He absolutely thinks it's different. Now, I don't think he means that it was terrible the last 3 years at OTAs. We'll see if it extends to training camp, Lee. But I saw a lot of guys very enthusiastic, happy to be there. A few no-shows. I don't know anybody that wasn't excused that wasn't here. A couple of quick impressions. Wasn't the greatest day, I don't think, for Jalen McMillan. Not the best. I think he had a couple of drops. Godwin, to me, continues to impress. And it just looks like they're organized. This coaching staff has done a good job of laying things out in an organized manner, so they don't waste a lot of time. Again, we'll see what happens in training camp. Speaking of training camp, Lee, the schedule's been out. Yeah, we'll get to it. Lee, what'd you see out there today besides a lot of sweat coming off your brow?
Baker Mayfield did not have a great practice. But I got to be fair to Baker Mayfield. Someone put on Twitter, oh, Antoine Winfield made this great play on Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield threw a pick that Antoine Winfield got. I don't think it was any kind of play. It happened right in front of me. Winfield was just standing there. He threw it right to freaking Winfield. I think Mayfield was under the assumption Godwin was going to be there. Godwin's maybe 5 yards away. But he threw it right to Winfield, right to him. And so I can't say this is a tremendous play by Antoine Winfield. Right guy, right place, right time. But Mayfield overall did not have a sharp practice. He threw one, was very low. It was batted down, of course. I don't think it got 5 foot off the ground. And honestly, I think he tried to pump, and the ball got loose. Like, you know how a batter will swing real hard, he'll try to pull up, and it didn't work? Sort of like that. Sort of like he threw so hard, or he pumped so hard, that he couldn't pull the ball back, and the ball got loose. Those things jumped out at me at practice. Godwin, of course, like you mentioned, Godwin, yeah, he looks so damn good. I didn't see much from Mbuka, but what I saw was good. Now, I put this out on Twitter. It was a video. I thought it was very benign, but people like these videos. It was a receiver dribble, Ted Hurst, and apparently his first step is lightning quick. And I put that on Twitter. That got a lot of reaction. So people are starting to get excited about Ted Hurst. I heard that word so much today, I want to throw up. We're excited to be in here. We're excited this. We're excited that. It's June.
If you're not excited as a football team on June 16th, you know, 2 months before the season starts, you don't belong getting a paycheck. Steve, Mayfield blessed us with his countenance today. We actually had eight minutes with Baker Mayfield. Didn't fend off any questions, answered them, including a contract question, which he knew was common, but at this point, he doesn't have anything new to report. And he kind of repeats that, I'm not going to let it affect me. I got my total focus on winning football. Would you expect any other kind of answer?
Not really. I expect that from him. Not necessarily the answer, but I don't think he'll let that get to him at all. Continence. I always thought that was for old folks with their timing, you know, their stool.
Get your mind out of the gutter there, Mr. DeKemper.
All right, now look, I got a lot to ask you. You know, I know you've changed your diaper here. No, I'm just kidding. I'm teasing. Lee just brought that up. Yes, Mayfield talked, and we'll get into some of the things that he said. But let's hit on one thing that he said that ties to something really horrible that was said on Friday. And for me, it just keeps piling on. Now, Yaya Diaby joined your buddy T-Kraz on WDAE. And he said that, I'm just going to read this quote to you, and then we'll get to Mayfield. He said, you know, T-Kraz, sometimes when you're watching our games, like sometimes it looks like we don't have juice out there, and sometimes it looks like guys don't have no love for the game. But, you know, Nacho brings that to the team and brings an excitement that we need to go out there and just do what we do. He brings a lot of juice that we need. Now, okay, so Diaby's been watching film and decided that the Bucks film that he watches says it doesn't look like we got any juice on the field. The defense is dead, and he thinks Nacho's going to help. Now, today, Mayfield says, quote, we needed some assholes over there on defense, talking about A'shaun Robinson and obviously guys with some intensity. Guys with some intensity. We know the names of Kadeem Muhammad, Anzalone, Reuben Bain. There's more and more and more people admitting how awfully soft. Your take on all of this put together, Yaya especially.
I think you're making a great point, Steve, and it's a depressing point, Lee. The more and more we get away from the 2025 debacle, that was the Bucks post-bye, the more we learn that half the defense was floating around thinking about other things and not wanting to be out there. Lee, no wonder they got five new starters, maybe six from my count, at least five, I think. I'll rattle them off right now. Bain, Muhammad, Anzalone, Trotter, I think, and I'm counting Scott. That's five. Lee, what the hell were they putting out there in 2025? Now, Mayfield said he thinks the defense is going to be a hell of a lot better. And as a throwaway line, which I know caught Mr. Isbitz's attention, because he don't miss anything, Lee, but as a throwaway line, when I asked him what lessons did he learn from last year, getting off the tracks post-bye, he kind of said, well, I guess we don't have to score 30 points a game anymore. Did you hear that, Lee? Yeah, I think he said something like that. It was in passing. He didn't want to dwell on it, but we all know this defense was a disaster area last year. The more we learn about it, you wonder why the guys that were out there, half of them.
You hit the nail on the head. Why the hell were they out there? Where was the coach? But I digress. I can't tell you how many times I've written since the end of the season, I thought that defense quit on Bulls. To me, Yaya's quote is damn near an admission of that. You know, he's not going to call out his teammates for quitting. But when he said it's like they don't give a damn, to me that's quitting. Politically correct way of saying they threw in the towel. They were done. There was a specific cornerback that was basically gifted a starting job, gifted a contract. He was absolutely just going through the motions. You know, the man who gets bored. And right there was a perfect example. So what Yaya is saying absolutely reinforces what I've been writing for 6-8 months, that this defense tanked on Bulls. We saw Bulls go off on him. We saw Levante David go off on him. We even heard about Mayfield going off on him. Nothing worked. They didn't give a damn. As Yaya Diaby said, it looked like they didn't care. Well, they didn't look like it. They didn't care. There needed to be a purge.
Steve, what an indictment. You know, now, look, Steve, a lot of those guys are gone. The Haason Reddicks, they're gone. But here comes McCollum. Steve, when training camp opens, you know, he's fighting for a starting job. The odds are he's probably going to start. Not necessarily. But not everybody's gone from a bunch of guys that didn't seem to care why they were out there.
Yeah, look, Vita Vea is still there. Cansey didn't play much, obviously, but plenty of guys. Nelson, Antoine Winfield, you know, we know all the names. It's just pretty telling when you hear Mayfield piling on a little bit and you hear Yaya piling on to guys that are still on the roster. How much more is going to come out? There was a quote, I heard Yaya say that. There was a quote from Mayfield on Barstool Sports. He did an off-season interview, I think, maybe 2 years ago. And he said, quote, our running game sucked last year. And he said that after the 23 season. And that was very, very harsh. And it was very raw and honest. But it's kind of like he's now saying our defense was soft as hell last year. You know, and he knows Vita Vea showed back up today and all these guys who he was saying, we need some assholes over there. It's just pretty telling. And the question really, I think, of this season comes down to, with new players and new defensive assistant coaches, can they overcome Todd Bowles, him allowing a soft team to walk on the field? Because the implication is quitting, not playing with juice, whatever you want to say it. Bowles allowed it. So can new players and new assistant coaches overcome it? I think so, but that's a big question.
You think part of it, Lee, could be the reason that we kept seeing the same guys making the same mistakes and being lethargic about it? And by the way, let's throw Lavonnie David into the mix. He said he loafed at times last year. I'm not making things up for Lavonnie David. I'm using his own words. Lee, you think part of the reason they kept throwing the same slop out there, so to speak, was when he looked at the depth chart, who am I going to replace this guy with? I don't have any depth. Can you throw Bowles a bone about that? Or no, if the guy's not getting the job done, you put somebody else in.
At the end of the day, Bowles, the defensive coordinator, he's got to come up with some answers. Maybe he didn't have any answers. I think this is a big year for Bowles, obviously. They don't return to the playoffs. You know, that we should have benched some guys? Yeah, regardless. I don't care if the guys were trash. Send a message. And we're not putting up with this anymore. Zion McCollum, you want to be bored? You can go home and be bored just as easy to be bored here. You know, we're losing because of you and other guys on the defense. We can lose just as easily without you. We'll get someone here who wants to play, that's got a little bit of a passion. Put Christian Izian in there. Now, I know he's not a cornerback, though. He had played some snaps. He had an attitude, a good attitude. But Bowles, he seemed like he preferred the same old guys. He didn't try to shake it up. At least it sure didn't look like he was trying to shake it up.
Steve, you listened when I asked Bowles about whether he's comfortable with his depth at cornerback. And I was looking at it. You know, he's got a bunch of young guys. Morrison, certainly. Parrish. Josh Hayes is not experienced. McCollum is a question mark. He didn't rule it out, Steve. He didn't rule it out. And his answer was, I got to see who's healthy. And I think he was talking about Morrison. Once again, Morrison a question mark.
Yeah, Morrison a question mark, and that's understandable. And plus, you know, he was a little banged up with a nothing tweak. Who knows what it really is. But just going to what Lee said, and I thought of this when I was driving home recently. We were chatting about Lee was saying playoff Lenny should be in the Ring of Honor. And I was thinking, hey, wait a minute. But it comes back today. I was thinking, hey, wait a minute. In week 14 of 2020, playoff Lenny was benched by Bruce Arians, inactive against the Vikings because of his attitude and his whatever. At the time, I was thinking, should a guy who was benched for his attitude and a not very good season up to that point go to the Ring of Honor? But today, I'm thinking, why Todd Bowles didn't deactivate a top player, you know, last year. So for attitude, maybe he should have. It's a big theme for this season. The cornerback thing is interesting, Ira, because the Bucs do have some salary cap flexibility. So if they want to get in on a late veteran cornerback, they have time to do that. Jason Light knows that. Bowles knows that. And they're not going to be grabbing a starter off the street. But if they feel they got a guy who's a legit third corner, or they got to trade for him or whatever, they can do it.
They do have some financial flexibility, maybe more than they're going to have next year, because one way or another, Mayfield's going to make a lot more money. And we all think that Mayfield's going to be back under center in 2027. I see a definite need for an experienced corner, Lee. I just do. I don't think you can have enough corners. And right now, I don't think they have enough. Because Scott, to me, I think he's out of the corner mix. I think he was drafted specifically to be a nickel. And Lee, the reason I say that is, otherwise, I don't think he would have been there in the fourth round. Yeah. If he was an outside corner, he would have been grabbed, maybe even late second round. But I think people didn't think he was that flexible. And, you know, you got to lock him in at nickel. So they passed on him. I think they need another corner, Lee.
Bowles, earlier this year, maybe March, maybe in April, he said they needed to add two corners. And something in my mind that maybe I'm counting Keontae Scott. Something in my mind said they already got one, but they didn't get two. Maybe I'm thinking of Scott.
Kemon Hall, I don't know how his name is pronounced. Also another corner, Chase Lucas. They signed them very quietly. It was like around April 10th or something like that, right before the draft. So these guys have played, not much. They're not big names. But if you ask Jason Light, he's going to say, well, we did sign a couple of corners.
Yes, that's exactly what Light would say. We did sign corners. Well, he didn't say they could play, Jason. It's just sign corners.
Steve, it's not outlandish to suggest that a week before the NFL season starts, not a treasure trove, but several veteran corners who make some coin are going to be available. And I think Light needs to be part of that party.
One thing I wanted to reference, you said before, Ira, and I know some fans probably tweaked a little bit. You said you see Al-Qadeen Muhammad as a starter. The Bucks may look to move Reuben Bain inside. Who knows? They may look at a five-man front to start games, like Lee said. Who knows? But Muhammad, is he going to start? He might earn it. Who knows?
I think I misspoke. I was talking more about Robinson. Robinson's going to be a starter, not necessarily Muhammad.
There we go again. Is Robinson going to start? Because you got Cansey, Vea. It's interesting. They got depth. Muhammad talked today a lot about, loves the depth, deepest room he's been around and all that stuff.
Steve, if Robinson doesn't start on rundowns in the beginning of the drive, when are you going to see him? He's not a pass rusher.
I understand, Ira, but they got some depth. We'll see. Who knows? You know, Todd Bowles, he moves these guys around. They're all going to play. And my big question, you know, I heard after hearing Yaya Diaby talking about Nacho, how he's going to, you know, revive the team and all this stuff. If the guy's not on the field, how much pull is he really going to have if he's running through training camp with the third team and he never plays? You know, there's a line there.
Yeah, that's a very fair point, Steve. And I thought that, too. Like, a guy that's basically on the bubble, how's he going to have all this influence? Most guys are going to tune him out. But maybe if he, you know, continues to chirp, that's a different story. This is one reason why I still am leaning at 7 wins. This team has so many question marks. So many question marks. I can't say right now, you know, it's middle of June. I can't say right now this team's going to be a winning team. I've asked this question rhetorically several times in stories. I'm not trying to incite anybody. I'm not trying to, you know, throw a firecracker into a bathroom or something like that. How often have you seen a defense, not just a Bucks defense, any defense, how often have you seen a defense improve when it lost its best corner? Now, in recent Bucks history, when they lost a corner, one time, I think the defense was a little bit better when they let go Aqib Talib. When I say a little bit, I'm talking like one or two spots. And, of course, when they let Revis go, which was one of the genius moves of the lost decade, the Bucks defense, the pass defense, went from like 23rd to 32nd.
You know, Steve, one other thing that Mayfield said in passing, besides maybe not having to score 30 points a game, I don't want to dwell on that, but, Steve, you heard him say it. It's a bold statement, but I understand it. It's not crazy, but according to Mayfield, this is the best offensive line in football when healthy. The best. I got him in the top five. Where do you have him?
Well, we talked about that a lot, and that when healthy, they were a top five unit a couple of years ago. But I think the important part is how does that factor into Mayfield's contract thinking? You're going to run away when you have what you probably genuinely believe is the best young offensive line in football. There's no Trent Williams retirement on the horizon here. Everybody's 28 or less. They're damn good, and hopefully the backups are better this year because they haven't proven really that they can stay healthy. But that, you know, it's important to understand where Mayfield's really thinking.
He also said, Lee, and I'm glad he said it, because the three of us have said it too. I don't know about you, Lee. I don't know if you're on board with this, but he said, as a matter of fact, throwing the ball 50 times a game. You've heard me say it. That's not a recipe for success in this league. I've said that. He said it. Lee, the more I think about this with Zach Robinson, a healthy O-line, Gainwell, this could be a ground-oriented offense, Lee. It could be. Would you have a problem with it if it's effective?
The last phrase is the kicker, if it's effective. I don't want to force anything. I don't want to force passing. I don't want to force running. What I do want, if something's working, here we go, don't fix it. If you're running the ball well, just pound the flipping ball until the defense shows they can stop you. If you're throwing the ball well, keep slinging that thing until the defense shows they can stop you. Whatever is working, keep doing it. It's really so simple. You were asking about the offensive line, Steve, or you were talking about it. I said they were the third best offensive line 2 years ago. First is, I'm confident Mayfield will be taking snaps from center a year from now, that he will be the Bucs starting quarterback in 2027. I am also fairly confident, and I don't know all the guys' contracts, I'm fairly confident the Bucs are going to fight like hell to keep the offensive line intact. You know, barring injury, they're going to fight like hell to keep these guys together. And finally, Ira, are you familiar with a defense that got better when their best corner left?
In the words of Lovie Smith, that's tough duty. That's tough duty. Steve, correct me if I'm wrong. In terms of the offensive line, I think the only guy that's up is Cody Mauch that I know of out of the starters. And I said it the other day. I'll say it again, Steve, unless you beg to differ. Cody Mauch's not going anywhere. He might be Light's favorite player on this team.
If Mauch has a good year, I think they would choose him over Vita Vea if they have to make that choice. So I agree with Lee that they'll pay the O-line before they pay the D-line right now. But it's all moot because it's right now. That could all change. You know, these guys have to stay healthy to be able to stay together for Jason Light to be able to make sense out of that. Sage, as far as the cornerback thing, I don't know. It's a tough question to ask because if you ask losing the best corner, well, what did they add? What did they not add? You know, some teams lose their best corner and replace them with a big money free agent. It's hard to say. I think the Bucs have tons of question marks at corner. That's really what it comes down to. I don't think Jamel Dean was that good. He had a nice season last year, but a spectacular season he didn't make a ton of money in free agency. He got good money, but not like crazy money. I don't know. Huge question mark for the Bucs. Ira, Bill Curry Ford, BillCurryFord.com. Get shopping there. So many offers, so many used vehicles, so much personal service. General Manager Sean Sullivan is ready for you, as we said before. Reach out to him, BillCurryFord.com. You can email him. You can find him through the website. He's there for you to give you the Ira Kaufman discount, BillCurryFord.com. So, Sage, Jason Light was talking to J.P. Peterson. He said, quote, we've had some discussions and we'll continue to have some internal discussions and see about Mayfield's contract and try to bring this to closure one way or another. No one wants to see Baker go anywhere. No one's worried about how Baker's mindset is going to be, blah, blah, blah. So I thought that was kind of an interesting choice of words from Light, who typically has said, oh, this stuff will all work out. He says, we'll continue to have some internal discussions and see and try to bring this to closure. That tells me that they did get a counteroffer from Mayfield, even though no one's reported it, because why would you continue to have internal discussions if you don't even know what the other side wants? So I think that was a tip-off. That was last Friday.
I think it's fair to say, Steve, that if the buck offer to Mayfield was deemed low by the Mayfield camp, if there was a counteroffer from Mayfield, it would probably be deemed high from the buck camp. That's negotiations, right, Lee? That's just the way it is. Steve, as far as these internal discussions, Lee, to me the crux of it is they're not sure what number to put on Mayfield right now. They're not quite sure. But if they could get a number that's buck-friendly and they could get him to accept it, I think they'd proceed and they could wrap this up before training camp starts. I think that's unlikely.
Albert Breer of SI.com basically said, Albert Breer cannot envision Mayfield settling for anything less than $50 million a year. He said, you know, Purdy makes over that. Above Goff, and Tua's in there as well. He can't envision Mayfield taking less than 50. What's the cap? The cap hit if he gets tagged 50 even? Yeah, so he's gonna get 50. Worst comes to worst, Jason Light has that tag in his back pocket he could use.
I think that's the point to make, that the last one that Lee just made. The Bucs hold the cards, Steve. If they want Mayfield to be their quarterback in 27, they can do that, and there's nothing Mayfield can do about it. Is he not going to sign his franchise tag?
Well, the thing is, in the modern era, nobody wants a player who doesn't want to be there. So if he decides, you know, you guys are jerking with me, I want out. Teams don't usually keep a player that wants out. They just don't. Maybe 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, but they don't. And especially given Todd Bowles' situation. But the Bucs aren't worried about it, and we're not worried about it either. We'll see. But I had to bring up Light's recent comments. So a few things from practice, Ira. Vita Vea was out there, but he wasn't practicing. He looked kind of svelte, you know, for him. Looked in good shape. Bowles doesn't want him to do anything because they don't need to see anything, and which makes a lot of sense. It's his ninth year in the defense. What do they need to see? It's underwear football. I'm glad he wasn't practicing. Al-Qadeen Muhammad practiced for the first time, and he had a very simple explanation. Well, last year I didn't play at OTAs with Detroit, and I had my best year ever, so why would I participate this year? But he practiced today. He's not a big guy. You know, who do you like in him too, Ira?
I don't want Buck fans to turn off this podcast when I say Hassan Reddick, but he's not a big guy. Hey, if he can come anywhere near what he did in spot duty last year with the Lions, and, you know, playing in front of Anzalone, it's a comfort level for him, maybe even for Anzalone. He's not going to play 80% of the defensive snaps, Lee. He's just not. That's not what he's here for. He's a spot player. Anthony Nelson's a spot player. This guy's there to hunt a quarterback, Lee. I think by reputation, he's weak against the run. That's why he doesn't play more, and that's why he wasn't that much of a coveted free agent. But he's there for one purpose, and boy, the Bucs need that purpose.
They sure do. Here's one for you, Ira. There was a Ringer podcast where they had a coach's draft, and it was back in May. They both picked Bowles at 27th, which, for those math-challenged like me, that's fifth worst. But then they both argued, well, he's better than that. And I'm thinking, if he's better than that, why didn't you pick him higher than 27th? But here's their thing with Bowles and the Bucs.
I haven't said that. There's eight new freaking coaches. So they got three new guys ahead.
Anyway, these two guys, they had an issue with Bowles, obviously. Their big issue with the Bowles and the Bucs this year, since you brought up Muhammad, the Bucs are banking on two 31-year-olds that their previous team thought, they're expendable. We don't need them. That's number one. Number two, my issue with Bucs and the Bowles, it just seems like they're banking on rookies on every level of the defense to play like veterans. That's a roll of the dice to me.
Well, yeah, you're right. Even linebacker with Trotter. You're not wrong. Scott's going to play a pivotal role. You know, I think he's going to win that nickel job. Of course, Bain goes without saying. It's a fair point, Lee, and you always make it, especially with a pass rusher. Usually takes time to make an impact. It's not open and shut that it has never happened, but it would be an outlier. It would be an outlier for Bain to get 10 sacks as a rookie. That's an outlier.
99 as a rookie was,
Yeah. Rookies galore all over that defense, Steve.
Yeah, I don't know about galore. You got Bain, okay? And so the Bain is a win, because if he just plays pretty good as a rookie, that's an upgrade. If Trotter's only pretty good, that's probably not an upgrade. Especially when you think of, and I think it's important to mention this, Levante David, yes, down year, yes, said he loafed a little bit, yes, he had the injuries, but he still made some big game-changing plays. Seattle comes to mind and a couple others, some big plays. So Trotter's going to have to find some big playability to match David. So that's probably a loss, and then Scott is probably a bit of a toss-up. He doesn't have to be a rookie legend, because every year Todd Bowles has a rookie at nickel, it seems, and the guy does okay. So I don't know if they're really banking on that much, because they don't need big leaps and bounds from these rookies. You know, there's only three, and if they're all kind of pretty good as rookies, they'll probably be status quo. What they need the boost is from Anzalone, you know, some of these other guys. Wanted to say that Lee was funny. Lee said the math challenge, 27th is actually sixth worst, not fifth worst. Yeah. So, yeah, Bowles doesn't have a lot of respect around the league, even though nobody is screaming for him to be fired outside of Tampa. He doesn't have a lot of respect around the league. The Glazers see that. I'm sure they read it at JoeBucksFan.com. You know, they know that. So Bowles he's on a hot seat, and they got to win early. Otherwise, it's going to get ugly.
They're giving him another chance, Steve. That we know. They're giving him another chance, much to Lee's chagrin and much to the chagrin of Buck Nation to a large degree. Why? Why are they giving him another chance? Lee, if I had to boil it down to one thing, Joe Glazer told Steve in March, and this goes against some of the things we've been saying. Yeah, I think at the meeting. They play hard for Todd Bowles. That's what Joe Glazer said. That's what Joe Glazer said. So I'm wondering if some of these remarks from the last month or two have caught the attention of the Glazers. And, it's too late to do a second guess, but that's what he said, Lee. Did you see that? Week in and week out, they play hard.
Of course not. We were just talking about that early in this very podcast, how they were loafing on defense. I thought they quit. So the fact that, you know, Joel Glazer is saying they play hard, that dog don't hunt, as they say. One of the points I made earlier, you didn't address it, but I'm curious to your feedback. What about the guys on that Ringer podcast saying they've got qualms with Bowles banking on two 31-year-old dudes who their previous teams said, we don't need you?
I don't think that's outlandish. I think it's a little bit of a concern. Steve, the Lions don't need another pass rusher with Hutchinson, yet they let the guy test the market. You know, all it takes is one team. They knew somebody was going to throw some money at Muhammad, not crazy money, but somebody. What is it, 11.5 sacks? That's a big number, Lee. We haven't seen that around here, these parts. In a long time. A'shaun Robinson, you know, same thing. Steve, they come on one-year deals. You know what that tells me? They're not going to be long-term Buccaneers. And Steve, should things go wrong, they'll both be gone. Neither one will be back in 27.
part of the Muhammad thing, he may just have had a crappy agent. I mean, that does happen a lot. You know, a guy tells his team, you're not offering me what I think, and I'm going to go test the market. And then they don't want him anymore, and he's looking around. He didn't jump on this, and his agent screwed up, and his agent told him, oh, we can get the Bucks on a two-year whatever, and then it doesn't work out. And next thing you know, he's on a prove-it contract. So that happens. And Muhammad's not exactly a big name. The guy was out of football in 2024. So, you know, it happens. And maybe we'll get lucky, and that's why. And he really is an eight-sack guy in a rotation, and everybody loves him. And, yeah, more Muhammad, and we're all screaming for that. So we'll see, Ira. As we heard earlier, Florida's Elite Restoration, floridaselite-restoration.com. Get there. Be prepared. Storm season is here. Mold, fire, flood, storm damage. You call them first. And remember, you got that Ira Kaufman discount. After your free evaluation, they will give you $500 back if you need their services to move forward to restore your property and get it right. Just mention Ira when you first call. All right, Sage. Now, Chris Godwin was brought up earlier. Now, Baker Mayfield, and you were talking about the team, maybe a run-heavy team this year. Baker Mayfield today was talking about, quote, dictating defenses because of the receivers and the variety of receivers, and they're going to dictate. And he raved about Godwin. I thought it was interesting. He said he worked out with Godwin all offseason. Now, remember, Mayfield's wife was pregnant. He was in town all year. Godwin's here year-round. Not all players are, but Godwin is. And that could be an extra bond. I looked it up, Sage. Mike Evans, when he was 30, 79 catches, 1,255 yards, and 13 touchdowns, which led the NFL. We got Chris Godwin now at 30.
Dave, you mentioned dictating to the defense with the powerful wide receiver core that they still have intact. Lee, you want to know how you dictate to the defense? Second and four, third and one. Yeah. Now you're dictating. I'm sticking with my run-heavy offense. I think that's the plan with Zach Robinson. Now, I'm not saying the guy's going to throw 18 passes a game. This ain't Alex Smith from the old days. Oh. He's not a caretaker. He's not going to be Bob Greasy with the 73 Dolphins when they run the ball 40 times. I'm not saying that. But with the addition of Gainwell, and if anybody thinks that Irving can be a reasonable facsimile of Bucky Irving in 2024, and the O-line's, now those are three ifs, relatively intact. Well, I'm not asking for all five offensive linemen to play 17 games. That's not reasonable. But something along the lines of 24 when I think they missed six or seven collective starts. I mean, that's a very fortunate season. Well, yeah, and you know Bowles. You know Bowles' preference, keep the game close. Now, a lot of that is, do I have a defense? But I can see this turning into a run-heavy team.
Yeah, I'll get to that momentarily. I just got to get this out of my craw. Not craw, craw. Keeping the game close, I just hit the ceiling when I hear that. That should never, ever, ever be a goal. Because guess what happens when you keep the game close? You keep the other team in the game. You step on their blankety-blank throat. You kill them. I just don't understand these defensive guys. I just drives me up a tree. Okay, I got that out of my system. I went back and listened to Kenneth Gainwell. And one of the reasons he came here, yes, he got paid. It's always about the money. But he saw what Zach Robinson did in Atlanta. And it wasn't just, and Gainwell said this, it wasn't just Bijan Robinson, Tyler Allgeier. Robinson had a run game. He knew how to craft a run game. And I really believe that's why Josh Grizzard's not here. I don't think he knew how to develop a run game. Yeah, he had a bad hand dealt to him because of all the offensive line injuries. But that running attack, and Steve pointed this up in Pittsburgh, never looked good.
And I don't think there's anybody in any NFL observer in the world that would take Atlanta's offensive line over the Bucs when both units are healthy.
All right, Sage, before we wrap up, we got one topic to hit on, and that's training camp. If you've heard us talk about this before and you don't want to listen, just remember to go to BillCurryFord.com and FloridasEliteRestoration.com. Bill Curry Ford, first class. All right. Sage, the Buccaneers announced training camp dates. We got three open to the public. We had three open to the public last year. Essentially, they're Women in Red Night that they do where they focus on female fans. That is considered an open practice because anybody can attend. I'm not going to quibble with that. It wasn't always part of that, so that's fine. So they only announced eight training camp dates. Eight. Now, part of that's because they're going to Jacksonville late in the summer for a joint practice before the last preseason game. And first week of preseason, they are going to New Jersey to face the Jets. There'll be two joint practices up there. So, but however, there are still more training camp practices that could be open to the public after the first preseason game. We got a whole week before another preseason game. And the Bucs are not opening those practices. So we got a total of eight. In past years, we've had 13, 14. The Patriots have a whopping 13 free practices open to the public. Not every team is announced yet, but the Bucs will kick off July 30th, Thursday, 8:30 a.m. The final training camp session is Sunday, August 9th. And that's it. Eight dates, three for the public. I haven't done the math, but we may be looking at only one where the team is actually in pads. Out of those three, maybe two. Your thoughts, Ira?
I hate to sound like a broken record, Lee, but I want more than three practices open to the general public. I just do. Now, I got to be fair, Lee. We've been going to Buck training camp for a long time. And I think it's fair to say, Lee, after about 10 days, if it's in the past, when it was still open to some fans, like August 14th, kids are back to school. Attendance was sparse, Lee. Once you have that big, you know, first week, and then you get away from a weekend. So I understand that, why they don't have maybe 13 or 14. But even if you're only going to have eight, I want six open to the general public.
That's very fair. I'd love to see them all open, but, you know, I'm waiting for the media schedule to come out. Only because that gives me more intel. Did you say one padded practice in training camp?
I said of the eight practices that will be open to fans of special interest groups and the general public, three for the general public, five for the other fans, we may only have one or two open to the general public that have pads.
Okay.
So the last Bucks practice open to anybody is August 9th. We assume, obviously, that the rest will be open to media, closed to fans. Maybe they have some VIPs trickling in. But August 9th is a Sunday, and the Bucks are supposed to have practices August 11th and 12th in New Jersey. So if they have Monday off to travel, preseason game is August 14th in New Jersey. The next practice would probably be Sunday at home, August 16th, but it's not open to the public.
Okay, so just to make it clear, of the practices that are open to the general public, only one is currently scheduled to be padded. Maybe. Wow. Wow. As soft as this defense was last year? Wow.
Now, that's NFL schedule because, you know, the first practice, I think it's first four practices, you can't be in pads. All right, Sage, look, we're going to say goodbye. We're happy to talk about being here, and we'll get more into the training camp dates when we have more information.
All right, there's only one way to wrap up this podcast. A quick review of disclosure day. Here we go again, Steve. All right, I'll make it simple. Decent, not great. Not even close to being great. It's not prime Spielberg. It's not Jaws. It's not Close Encounters. Yeah, it's not Schindler's List. Convoluted plot, 2 hours and 20 minutes. Steve, you got a movie for 2 hours and 20 minutes right off the top? You're 20 minutes too long.